I just first want to say thank you for speaking with me. I was very excited when Professor Zesh mentioned that we could connect. So thank you. And I guess my first question is, how did you get involved with the Janes? Let's start with a broad one.
Tell me just a little bit about you to start. What year are you at the school, and are you interested in journalism, or what's your field?
Oh yeah, for sure. So I'm a second year right now. I started out with journalism, but I'm thinking I'm gonna go more towards the legal side. I'm currently a human rights and hopefully law, letters, and society major. I'll find out next week if I am that major or not. So I say hopefully.
Well, all the best. All the
Thank you.
best to you. Glad to know you've got that kind of social commitment.
Yeah, thank you.
For me, it really goes back to the civil rights movement. I became active on civil rights for many reasons, seeing the bloodied pictures of the bloody of the body of Emmett Till, the teenager from Chicago who was murdered at the hands of a Klan in Mississippi. And just hearing other stories, I felt this is we need to do things to correct to move for justice in the society. And by 1960, I became active with a number of the civil rights organizations. And in 63, I started the University of Chicago. And that summer in 1964, I went to Mississippi with the Freedom Summer Project. And that was a project where Northern students were recruited to go to Mississippi to help shine a spotlight on efforts of African Americans to register to vote. And they were being intimidated, some were being murdered while they tried to simply register and vote. And it was during that summer project that three of the young volunteers, Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner, were killed at the hands of the Klan. And I mention that because within a year, we had a Voting Rights Act, and I learned some key lessons. The most important of which is that if you organize, you can change the world, but you need to organize and with love at the center. And the other thing is, sometimes you need to stand up to illegitimate authority. When I was in Mississippi, I was simply demonstrating in support of a voter registration drive and was arrested. It was the first time I was arrested. I was shocked. And what I realized is sometimes there are some risks you might take, but you really need to follow what is just, moral, and the right thing to do. I came back to the university, and in 1965, a friend of mine said that his sister was pregnant and nearly suicidal, and she wasn't prepared to have a child, and asked, could I help find someone to provide an abortion for her? And I hadn't really thought about the issue of abortion. We should remember that in 1965, women barely knew how our bodies functioned. There was a group in Boston, in fact, called Our Bodies Ourselves, that explained how our bodies function. There was an article that came out even later called The Myth of the Vaginal Orgasm. And it was actually an eye-opener to me. But people didn't discuss these things publicly. Just as one example for the university, a little later, but just to give you a feeling for what life was like at the university and life was like in Chicago, a friend of mine was pregnant. I'm sorry, a friend of mine had been raped at knife point in her bed in off-campus housing. And we went with her to student health for a gynecological exam. And she was given a lecture on her promiscuity. And she was also told that student health at that point didn't cover gynecological exams.
Huh.
And so we sat with her, and some said it was a sit-in. But what happened over time is, of course, because people organize, of course the university provides gynecological exams. Of course they provide care and counseling. Of course they provide support and are attentive to prevention of attacks on women and others. So I saw how you can make change, but only if you take action, if you organize.
Mm-hmm.
So I said I'd see what I could do, and I went to the medical arm of the civil rights movement, the Medical Committee for Human Rights. And I found a doctor, Dr. P.R.M. Howard, who actually had a clinic on 63rd Street. I didn't know that at the time. And I also didn't know that he had been a very courageous civil rights leader in Mississippi until his name appeared on the Klan death list, partly because he had called for the investigation of the murder of Emmett Till.
Mm.
So he provided the procedure. Everything was fine. And I thought that it was that was my full involvement. That would be it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was successful. But then word spread and someone else called.
Mm.
I made that arrangement. Everything was fine. And then word spread again. And I realized if there was going to be more, if there were going to be more people looking for this, I needed to set up a system. And I found out from Dr. Howard what's involved before, what's involved after. I've never faced it myself, so I had to understand it more. What would you advise people in advance? How do you help people care for themselves after? How much did it cost? It was $500. We tried to negotiate on the price. We did negotiate on the price. We got it. We got, could get sometimes two for the price of one. If someone came through and had no money, you might take that person. And the price was lowered. And more people started to come. At first, there were students from the university. Then there were people from Hyde Park. Then there were people from other areas, like one person who came through, the wife of a policeman came through with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that the police even knew about it. And then people started to come from places in the Midwest, many of them from other colleges in the Midwest.
Uh-huh.
Over time, more and more people were coming through, and I couldn't handle it all myself. So I went to recruit others for the to be involved in the counseling. And because three people talking about performing an abortion in Chicago in 1965 was a conspiracy to commit a felony, we said, we spread the message, pregnant don't want to be, call Jane. And we called the service Jane. After a while, I lost contact with Dr. Howard. It turned out, I didn't know it at the time, but he had been arrested for performing an abortion or abortions. And I found another provider. His name was Mike. And again, he carried on the same system that Dr. Howard had carried on. But over time, so many more people were coming through that the women who were counseling in Jane started to help Mike with the procedures. And everything was safe and caring, and a real caring community was created for the women coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out the women learned that Mike wasn't a doctor. And they realized that if he could do it, they could do it. Mm-hmm. And so they learned how to perform the procedure. And between 1965 and 1973, the women of Jane performed 11,000 abortions.
Wow. 11,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
And there is this movie that's going to be shown on campus on the 26th at Ida Noyes Hall at 6:30.
Yes, I saw. Unfortunately, they had sold out of tickets before I could get one. I was so disappointed.
You know, if you want a ticket, send me a note with your name and everything else, and I will tell them, because I think people are not going to show up, and then there will be vacancies.
Okay, I will, for sure.
So I think they can get you a reserve ticket.
Thank you. I will definitely do that after this. So I guess then my next question is, what would you say was one of the most difficult things about organizing Jane?
The most difficult things. Let's see. Well, one is that it wasn't legal, and so it was secret. Mm-hmm. And so it's spreading the word and providing support in an era of secrecy. The most painful part of it was seeing how fearful many of the women were who were coming through the service, who didn't feel they had alternatives. But it was also quite a joy to see how grateful they were for having come through Jane. There also was a question, I think, of confidence. Often people feel they don't know enough. They're not good enough. They can't do something. And so I think building a women's community of caring and support is extremely important to build the confidence that you can move ahead.
Yeah.
And you are good enough.
Got it. Okay. So I guess on the thread then, were you part of the group that got arrested right before Roe v. Wade? What happened, if that makes sense?
No, there were seven women.
Okay.
I left Jane by 1969. I was no longer part of it. And in 1972, this sister-in-law of one of the people who was seeking an abortion, having found out about it, opposed her sister-in-law having it, and reported it to the police. And the story is told in the movie, but the homicide police were told they had to make an arrest. And the irony, as I said, is that we know that the police knew about it and were actually in many ways protecting the women of Jane. They would provide a support for it.
In what ways were they providing support?
Well, support may be the wrong word, but they were, knowing they were knowledgeable about it, some of the people who came through were wives, partners, or people in the police department themselves. And so you really should see the movie.
Yeah.
Because the movie, the lead policeman who led the raid is in the movie, and it's really quite stunning what he says. Okay. Support was the wrong word. I correct that one.
Yeah.
They arrested seven people. I was not one of them.
Okay. So I guess then, what caused you to leave Jane then in 69, or is that what you said?
Yeah. Well, at that point, I was in grad school. I was working full-time. I was doing a lot of movement social change work, and also had my first child in 1968. There was just too much going on, and there were too many people coming through, and I found wonderful a wonderful group of women who were willing and able to carry it on.
And this was a trial for your civil rights work, pre-Jane? Or a different trial?
Could you say that again? I didn't say trial. I said child.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Child, Jane. Uh-huh. Okay, got you. Okay, and so I guess then my next question is, looking back, is there anything you would change about the way you organized Jane, or anything you would alter, you know, something you're really proud of on the other side of it?
I think it was wonderful that women were able to help other women. Mm-hmm. I think it was wonderful what it meant for the lives of the people who came through. In fact, one of the last people I saw when I was doing the counseling, after one of the women had the abortion, she came to see me with her fiancé and said she hoped someday that she could have the happy life and family mm-hmm. that I had. And she brought flowers and champagne and aww. As a gratitude, but she wasn't ready for it at that point in her life. So what I'm glad about is the difference that it made in so many women's lives. And though there were 11,000, but the women of Jane, where the women of Jane performed 11,000 abortions, there were many, many more who just came through that either Dr. Howard or Mike or other people provided those procedures. I'm very grateful to the remarkable women who stayed with Jane and continued the services and built a caring community. I'm very grateful for those who fought and organized in a public way to win the reforms because of this lesson I said at first, that if you organize with love at the center, we have changed this world and we will change this world. And that's why Roe became the law of the land. Mm-hmm. Of things that I would have done differently, remember, it didn't start as like a conscious plan to build this. It started as a good deed for a friend. So it wasn't like saying, what kind of organization can we build? It was more like, responding to a friend in need and then building on it step by step. One of the things is that the University of Chicago was predominantly, overwhelmingly white organization. Mm. And the women who provided the counseling were overwhelmingly white. And there were, once the laws started to change in Colorado, New York and Hawaii, people who could get the procedure in other states would go there. Those who had the money, those who had the connections, those who had the knowledge about where to go. Mm-hmm. And so the population that was coming through Jane was increasingly poorer, more Black, and more people without the same level of social supports. So, at that time, I don't think we had the tools for ensuring that the counselors were more multiracial. Mm-hmm. there were attempts. You know, someone who comes through, you ask them, would you like to be part of the service? Well, they've got other things in their life, and they may not want to think about this again. However grateful they were for it. Mm-hmm. But that's one change. And mostly because it was secret, because it wasn't legal, we weren't visible. I didn't talk about Jane to a broader group until Laura Kaplan wrote her book, which was, I don't know, at least 10 years later, mm-hmm. maybe more, maybe 15 years later.
Yeah. So what caused you then to start speaking about it? Was it just that she was writing a book, or was there a larger movement to, like, speak about Jane?
There was no, the first time I talked about it was because she was writing a book and I had to think about it. Did I want to, you know, if you publicize it, I didn't know if there was a statute of limitation, yeah. that there was, you know, what was the implication of it, of talking about it. Mm-hmm. But she was writing a book and I thought it was worth sharing the story that I hoped would encourage others to take action, mm-hmm. and to take action with others, not only to provide and support people facing this decision in their life, but also to take action to change the laws and to protect the laws and to do the organizing and to expand it. This is the most intimate decision of a person's life. When or whether or with whom we have a child. It's a fundamental freedom. And right now, our freedoms are under attack. Reproductive freedom, but the freedom to vote, the freedom to thrive and prosper for many people. And so we're really at a knife's edge in the society between the struggle for freedom and those who want to deny that freedom and create an authoritarian rule. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite important now that people do take action, join with others, do organize, do register, do vote, do build a caring community. Mm-hmm. And make this a better world and build our power to make this, to win the freedom that we need in our lives.
Yeah. And so I guess then on that thread, I had spoken to some other members of Jane pre-Dobbs. And so I was just wondering now, speaking with you post-Dobbs, what are your thoughts on this ruling in relation to Jane especially?
Well, I have two reactions. One reaction is that it's horrific. It means that there are women who will face injury to themselves or have injury done to them for people who are looking for what they may find as a desperate alternative. Many lives will be thwarted. And there will be increasing hardship, as well as it's a chipping away of these freedoms in our life. I'm also horrified because it reflects making this issue a partisan issue by a MAGA Republican faction in the country who, before about 1972, this was not a partisan issue. And there was a conscious attempt to make it that way. And so in part, I'm horrified by it, by the amount of money involved and by the violence is going on with people who think that they can use violence and undemocratic means, small d democratic, to undermine the will of the public. Right now, if you ask people, do you think the overwhelming majority think that Roe should have been sustained? Almost 80% think that, if you ask the question, if you say no politician should come between a woman and her physician on making this most intimate decision of our lives, you get over 70% who believe that. And yet, the Supreme Court and many state legislatures are overturning that decision, again, largely for partisan and political purposes. Not only for that, but that is one of the driving forces. The second reaction I have is it is a call to action, that we've seen from the past that when we organize, we have changed this world. And if we organize now, we can change this world. But we have to come together. We have to educate. We have to raise the funds. We have to talk to others. We have to recruit people to be involved. We have to show up to raise our voices. We need to organize. And if we organize with love at the center, we will change this world. This will not stand.
Well, thank you very much. That was it for my questions. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, this was great. Would you make be sure, do you have my email address?
Yes, I do.
And would you send me a copy of the article when it comes out?
Absolutely, for sure.
And do you know when it will come out?
I have it mostly written from last year. I'm just hoping at this point to add in your bit and make some more edits. So hopefully by mid-February, but potentially a little bit sooner. I'll definitely let you know as soon as it gets published, though.
Okay. And is it possible for you to send me a hard copy?
Of the article, like if it's in print?
Yeah, with a copy of that issue of the Maroon.
Yeah, definitely. If you wouldn't mind sending me your mailing address.
Okay. Can I tell it to you now?
Yes. Give me 2 seconds to grab a piece of paper. Let me see. Okay, I got it. What is it?
And if it's inconvenient, you don't have to really. Just sending the electronic copy of the article will be great.
No, but I'd be happy to.
And I rarely have ever asked for the newspaper, but it's, you know, I went to the University of Chicago and...
No, I'd be happy to.
You should also say, I was glad that I went to the University of Chicago. In fact, if you could include that.
Yeah.
And let them know that I feel it gave me... it did help me think with intellectual rigor, and introduced me to new ideas and people, and I've been grateful for the university experience.
Mm-hmm.
So my address is 3724 Benton Street, Benton Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20007.
Just to read it back to you. 3724 Benton Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2007.
No, there's one more zero.
Oh,
there's three zeros.
Okay. Gotcha. 20007.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciated speaking with you. Your insight was really valuable, both on a journalistic and personal.
I appreciate your working on the Maroon and... it's a long tradition, and I appreciate you covering the story. And if you send me the email that you wanted to come to the film,
yes.
I'll send it to the people who are organizing it and see if they can arrange for a ticket.
Thank you. I'll be sure to do that and also send you a recording of this interview.
Great. And my bet is if you show up, there will be blank tickets. There will be spaces.
Perfect. I will try my hand tomorrow. Okay. Thank you.
All the best. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.